Okay, I welcome all of you to English Dhamma discussion. Last time also we couldn't do it. So we were discussing several suttas in the Samyutta Nikaya. Samyutta Nikaya is one of the books in the canon, Sutta Pitaka, where various kinds of connected discourses are compiled. And now we are in a sutta called Sanamana Sutta. So very interesting one. We'll see what is there for us to learn. So here we have Venerable Dhamma Vijita, Venerable Kenya Dhammosada, Kelvin and Krellick. Drevik. Drevik from where? Sri Lanka. Yeah? Kasun Herat. Okay. So some of us are here and some are joining from the Zoom. So just to start with, I'll recite the Pali verse. So that will make a start of that. Sanamana Sutta. Tithe majjantike kale sannisivesu pakkisu santeva braharanyang tam bhayang patibhati manti. I'll repeat it again. Tithe majjantike kale sannisivesu pakkisu sanateva braharanyang tam bhayang patibhati manti. So singular translation going like this. Siti maddahanehi pakshin isimbulana kalhi vanaya mahatse hadanagannak meni e mata biyakwa vatehi. Now this is something mentioned by a deity. Deity is telling that he feel frightened when the forest is silent. Can you repeat the translation? Yeah.
Yes, this sutta is called Murmuring, and it's the 15th sutta of the Devata Samyutta. When the noon hour sets in and the birds have settled down, the mighty forest itself murmurs. How fearful that appears to me.
Mm. So probably you have seen that certain times are there. There are no birds in the sky. They all came down. They all came down and they are resting. They may be on the trees and they take a nap. They take a rest. And you probably have seen even these monkeys. There are certain times of the monkeys. They are not jumping and crawling and, you know, quarreling and any of things. They just lying down and they take a rest. So even they are having little break sometime. Very interesting. I have noticed that certain times in monkey that Rilava, so they all don't go for any looking for food, or they are not quarreling each other, they are not fighting each other, but they also calm down and just relaxing. And just sometimes they help each other and finding the ticks in them. So likewise they take a little break. So similarly here mentioned, sometimes all the birds have come down and they simply came to the trees or to the ground and they take a break. And now no any noise in the forest. Think like that. So there may be a time, it's completely, now it's a noon time. Noon time, so heavy, I mean it's very hot by the way. No any sound at all. A complete silence is there. But that complete silence make me frightened. So that's what the deity is telling. Then we'll see what the Buddha is telling. Tithe majjantike kale sannisi vesu pakkisu sanateva braharanyang sarati patibhati manti. So Buddha is telling, Siti maddaha nehi, pakshin isimbulana kalhi, mahavane mahatse handanaganna akmeni, e mata sitpinavannakse vetahi. So you can make the English translation.
When the noon hour sets in, and the birds have settled down, the mighty forest itself murmurs, how delightful that appears to me.
Now Buddha says the opposite. So Buddha say that everything is now calm down, even the birds are not chirping, everything is silent. That complete silence makes me really happy. You know, you can see that the complete opposite sides. So typically we even hate the silence. That's why we switch on the radio, we switch on the TV, we want to browse through the internet, because we hate silence. We can't appreciate silence. So that's the issue with us. So we want something, isn't it? We want something to be delighted. So we can't appreciate that emptiness anyway. We can't appreciate that nothingness. So we need something. We need some sort of a triggering to the senses, some sort of activation, triggering, provocation to the senses. We can't appreciate the silence. So that's an issue actually we all have. Now, actually, using this, there's a beautiful conversation happened. You know Ajahn Amaro in Amaravati. So they have compiled a book, I think Sound of Silence, I think that's the name of the book, Sound of Silence. You know this, when we are meditating, at a one given moment, you attune to a level that the sound of silence is heard. It's happened like crickets, you know, a little kind of a crickets, sometimes called crickets, the sound of the crickets, like grasshoppers or something like that. This is a little, some unusual during the daytime. During the daytime, there is such happen. But it's not immediately happening. You have to attune to that. Because your mind has to be fairly silent. Then only you can hear this different kind of a cricket sound. Probably you have not experienced that. So anyway, I mean, for some people it may be frightening. So what's going on? They might go and see the doctor. But that is typically translated as sound of silence. So when everything is calm, when everything is peaceful, there's a murmur. This is the sound of silence. So you start appreciating it. You start see it like a background of the whole system, whole universe, something like that. And your mind is now attuned to that, focused to that. It also can disappear. But we can appreciate that. Rather than being frightened to that, I can be happy. Because no fabrications, no thoughts, no thinking, no noise, no outside, you know, any noise. So now everything is cool. Everything is calm. So let me be with it. So that is one area that I'd like to mention. So this is something actually one can experience even through samatha meditation. You don't need to go to vipassana to experience it. So when one is practicing samatha meditation, so you may be able to calm down the thinking. The important thing is that the stopping of the proliferation. The mind has to completely let go of the proliferation. Mind has to come to the fair silence of the mind, in the sense the thinking has stopped now. It has faded away. Now no thinking. Inner chatter completely disappeared. Now you are in a very silent mood. So everything is calm now. Now we have rain. Now when raining, it's some sort of noise. But assume a time when no rain at all, then silence is there. Similarly, our mind is also every time raining. Thinking, too much thinking. Like raining. Very noisy. But when rain stops, nothing is there. You're completely calm, no, relax. So that state, can we appreciate that silence? Not yet. We haven't yet practiced the vipassana. But still some silence is there now. Say, for example, you are in the walking session. Say, at the beginning, you get a lot of thoughts, many distractions. But later, again and again, as you are applying your mind to the object, so then these thoughts become faded away. They become weaker and weaker. Ultimately, you may reach to a state there are no thinking. So mind is silent. But still, you can feel you are fully alive. So while you are fully alive and attentive, still you can feel things, but mind is silent. So these are the areas actually we need to look forward. Because otherwise what happens is we think that the mind always have to think, isn't it? So our wrong perception is that in order for me to feel living, the mind should think. I think, therefore I am. So that's the old, I think Descartes, René Descartes' statement, with respect to this Western psychology, they are saying, so there are thinking going on, thoughts going on, so I am feeling the presence of myself. But when no thinking, when completely the thinking has subsided, still you are living. You are living in a more peaceful state. You are in a more calm, relaxed state. So those are the very beautiful areas. Actually, the meditation, sometimes people consider it like very dry type of a thing. But when we are looking at from these kind of angles, these are very aesthetic in a way. Now we are going to enter different domains in the mind, isn't it? So we are in a typical, very noisy domain every time. Very active, noisy, cluttered kind of a domain we usually reside. But the meditation actually helps us to jump or switch to a very peaceful, calm, relaxed, silent domain. But fully aware. You are not sleeping. Fully aware. So that is one area I like to highlight. So while there, probably you might hear this sound of silence. That is one thing. But this sound of silence is also not permanent. So at one age of your meditation, you might hear it. But as you continue, it also may disappear. Assume now you are practicing vipassana. You practice vipassana, and as a result of that, again, more wise way, you can stop inner chatter. Now previously, because of the strength of the samadhi, the inner chatter has subsided. But now, since you are not promoting any proliferation, since you have understood its futile nature, and how these coming and going, arising and passing away, that wisdom has reduced the proliferation. That wisdom has cut off the proliferation. Now mind come to a deeper kind of a silence. Now there is no sound of silence either. No crickets now. Now you are in a utter silence. Complete silence. So this is the area actually I like to highlight in the vipassana particularly. So you may be have the potential to reach that. So the sankharas are calmed down. Sankharas, the formations have stopped basically. And thinking also have stopped. And your mind is very clear. No sanya, no perception, so no mental cluttering. Mind is very clear. And just be there. Just enjoy that. Enjoy the peace. Peace of the inner silence. So, we don't need to be afraid of it. So that's why Buddha reiterated. So, you fellow feel frightened to it, but I am enjoying it. You see the opposite? I mean, typically the worldlings hate the silence. They want the noise. They want the breakdance. But Buddha, he appreciates the silence, the peace. He's enjoying it. Very beautiful, how the opposite sides are talking. Anything you please?
Thank you, Bhante, for your great way of interpreting this. The Bhikkhu Bodhi mentions a commentary that says, in the dry season, at high noon, when the animals and birds are all sitting quietly, a great sound arises from the depths of the forest as the wind blows through the trees, bamboo clusters, and hollows. At that moment, an obtuse deva, unable to find a companion with whom to sit and converse amiably, uttered the first stanza. And then it says, but when a bhikkhu has returned from alms round and sitting alone in a secluded forest abode, attending to his meditation subject, abundant happiness arises. So it's a little different.
Super different, yeah.
But still the same. I liked your interpretation of how, we become disturbed if it's things settle down and our minds are becoming. I think I've heard Chief Bhante mention that.
He actually pointed out in the book, actually that Sound of Silence book by Ajahn Amaro, it was translated to Sinhala. In Sri Lanka here at Nisarnawana, it was translated to Sinhala by one lady called Rani Rajapaksha. So, Nihande Handa. Oh, Atulita Savandhi is the Sinhala term given. So, there Bhante Dhammajiva has referred this verse. Yeah, this verse he has referred. Explaining, though, this is the silence that Buddha is talking. Now, here, silence in the sense, as I said, the sound of silence. Because everything, the environment has silenced, but that silence is something frightening to the Deva. Because he can't bear it. Because everything has stopped, what's going to happen. So I don't like to agree with Bhikkhu Bodhi. He's telling that when everything calmed down, when even the birds are not chirping, now the wind blows and makes the sound. But rather than saying so, I see the opposite. So everybody calmed down, everything has stopped. Now it is frightening. Silence is frightening now.
Sense to me, yeah, right, yeah. For Dhammajiva Bhante's interpretation.
Yes. I also like that.
It makes more sense.
Murmur, the term murmur, yes, is for a very silent murmuring.
Yeah.
Silent murmuring.
Yes.
When the
That's
wind
true.
Is blowing, it makes a huge sound.
Right.
So then why are we interpreting it as a murmur?
Yes.
So I don't think that we can agree with that.
Yeah.
So I feel that murmur right now available is the sound of silence.
Yes.
That is a little murmuring, very subtle murmuring.
Yes.
So that is frightening for the Deva.
Yeah.
But for the yogi, to the Buddha, it's enjoyable.
Yes, I appreciate that because, I've noticed that often Bhikkhu Bodhi's translations are very... he said that these stanzas were very difficult to translate. Difficult things to understand. Mm. But this is a commentary, SPK commentary, that said this. So I like what Dhammajiva Bhante says, that don't trust these commentaries too much because they're coming from I think they're a good place to start often because they tell word meanings.
Some meaning is there.
But this one, this one's a more subtle sort of a sutta. And I really... find your teaching and Dhammajiva's commentary very very much more informative to the way we practice.
So Ajahn, sound of silence is a very great topic taken by Ajahn Sumedho and Ajahn Amaro. So really beautifully they explain. That's very, very appreciable. And that's what we also translated in Nisarnavane, that sound of silence book was translated to Sinhala also. Because it's some deep subject, because sometimes people misled. When everything calms down, they hear this unconventional type of a sound. This cricket, sound of the crickets. They feel frightened probably. They might think, okay, I am going through some mistake. I have to see the doctor. So often they try to see a doctor.
And it's a very, I have it, it's, it, well, there's something that's called tinnitus.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I actually suffered hearing damage when I was a musician because you play the cymbals and they're very high pitched. So what I read about tinnitus is that when you lose your high range hearing, the brain sends the signal of that high range, so you hear it all the time.
Ooh.
I can hear it right now.
Really?
It's so that's from hearing damage. Mm, mm. But, I've heard that also another drummer, the famous drummer, was saying that some people even commit suicide because of this sound. So it's interesting that people do become disturbed by it. But even though mine is, I can hear it clearly just right now. So even when it's, but when I've noticed when I'm meditating in a deep concentration that there's no, I have no sense of it.
Right.
I could notice it if I wanted to, but I think the calming and tranquil qualities are they're more prominent, it seems. So there's no bother of it at all.
Exactly. At the beginning only it bothers, and then they start reporting it, Bhante, what's this happening? I hear this sound. Then when they say, okay, just enjoy it, then they start enjoying it. It's no more an issue.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a milestone that we achieved in our meditation. Okay, once we reach some area, so your inner chattering has completely stopped, and you are attuned to this sound of silence, and you can simply enjoy it. Usually we are not taking it for vipassana. It's appear like a kind of background. On top of that, we need to further and further practice. So the practice might further reduce it, and ultimately it might also disappear, and you come to a complete silence. Now there is, say, one may reach a silence, now there is no the sound of the crickets. Still now complete silence may be there. Even that may be frightening, but that is something one has to appreciate either. So these are very interesting. Yeah,
please. Yeah, I think it might be that tinnitus might be actually I'm sure that it's more common these days because people wear the earbuds and listen to music very loud as well and go to concerts and the music's very loud. Mm. So that damages your hearing and then that tinnitus happens.
It's called
tinnitus.
Tinnitus, right.
Yes.
Right.
Tinnitus. Not tendinitis, which you have in your wrists, but tinnitus. Mm. And so... Yeah, and you notice it. And I think, well, I'm sure that people also purchase, like, recordings of the ocean so they can go to sleep because it blocks out the sound of this sound that bothers people.
Right.
But
right.
I've never had it bother me. I've been meditating for almost, 24 years. So about the time I was meditating before I quit playing music, and then I keep meditating, I've never had any problem with that. It's never bothered me.
Actually, I have an issue, that if I concentrate too much to books or any matter or something, then at night, there's a kind of a hum sound comes. You know, humming sound. That humming sound is a little disturbing and it's difficult to sleep. When kind of humming is there in the mind. But when the things are happening smoothly, I mean, no stress or no too much, screen time or no too much brain time, then things are, it does not appear. Because sometimes I feel when we are strenuously overuse the brain, it can create some noise in the mind.
Hmm. Also, caffeine increases it.
I see.
They, when I read about tinnitus, they said don't drink caffeine. And I've noticed when I have drank, I've quit drinking caffeine. But
really?
If you stop drinking caffeine and then you have some caffeine, you'll notice it's
I see. Because it is more possible to happen when the environment is dry. I have noticed when the environment is, too much with some humidity, rain and all, so it's rarely happened. But if the environment is very dry, and again I have used the brain too much concentration, too much activities, then if too much use of brain can generate that sound.
Yeah, so caffeine dries you out.
Exactly.
But it I think it also really... somehow it's stimulating your nervous system.
Maybe.
And that is connected with your hearing, your nerves. Mm.
It's disturbing, actually. It is disturbing. Basically disturbs the sleeping. It's very difficult to sleep when it is there. Then I have to go out and relax again and calm down and relax. Relaxation basically helps me to overcome that. But otherwise, very difficult to even sleep when it is there. Yeah. Anything to share? Any of your experiences? Kenya, how about you? Any sounds from Kenya?
Vasai Swaminathan, I've actually suffered from tinnitus as well. And I went to see an ENT for that.
Really?
And his prescription was avoid loud music and sleep to soft music. That was his prescription.
Mm-hmm.
No medicine, no nothing.
No medicine.
But it's been years since I've had tinnitus again.
Uh-huh.
It just disappeared.
Have you gone through that medication and have you recovered from it?
Yes. Like I said, it's been years since I've heard that high-pitched sound.
High-pitched sound.
Yes. When it was there, it would wake me up in the night.
I see.
Thinking... like there's some alarm going off, there's some loud noise.
Right.
But once I open my eyes, I find that it's just very quiet.
Very quiet.
Pin drop silence.
Mm.
But when the tinnitus was there, it was
a
really high pitch. Mm. It was scary waking you up from sleep.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I haven't heard it in years.
Right.
So
haven't heard it in years now.
Yes, that was many years ago.
Great.
Yeah. Anyways, back to the sutta, it reminds me of a friend that I, one of my old friends, she told me that she can't stay in her house without the TV on.
I see.
Like, even when she's cleaning, when she's in the kitchen, she just has to have the TV on because she cannot stand the silence.
Exactly. That's what I like to know because this is a kind of an issue we sometimes have. So people hate silence because people can't bear the silence. So that is the issue actually Buddha is addressing here. Now, when even the birds chirping has stopped, everything has stopped, the forest become utterly silent. So the deity was frightened by that, but Buddha was enjoying that. So that is the opposite situation that we need to actually may see.
Yeah. And I think we, or I, am not that different from my friend, because even though I don't have a TV or a radio, the thoughts,
thinking,
that's still the noise, noise that is exactly. Still always.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's very true. Now, I mean, it remembers me another point, you know, that Buddha talks about the viveka, the kind of seclusion. So he talks at three levels, kaya viveka, chitta viveka, upadhi viveka. The kaya viveka is where you separate from the crowd and you find a kind of a secluded place and you are simply alone. So that is the kaya viveka. The chitta viveka is where, say, hindrances are abandoned. Now, no hindrances. You are kamachanda vyapada teenamidda uddacha kuccha vichikiccha, you know, the sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and the doubt. These things are abandoned temporarily. So that's, we can say, the chitta viveka. Upadhi viveka is where that all the upadhis are abandoned, you are not grasping anything at all, no fetters, no defilements. Now that is the complete kind of the viveka, complete seclusion. So therefore, in the silence also, you may have different levels, different, say, areas. So you may go to a place, there are no sounds, say, a silent place. So that's very much like kaya viveka. So there are no external sounds available. And there may be another level, say, you are attuned to the sound of silence and your defilements or the hindrances are subsided and you come to a another level of silence. But assume another level where the hindrances are abandoned, defilements are fairly weakened, and your mind is very much like endorsed with, say, wisdom. It stops the conceptual proliferation fairly. Then you are reaching utter silence. So this is very interesting. I mean, you know, the silence of the mind, the inner silence, is something that we have to start appreciating. Otherwise, what happens is we start hating it, we feel bored about it, and we think, okay, what next to do? What next to do? So that's a problem we are having. So why can't you enjoy that silence? I mean, you have reached the bottom. Just be there. Just dwell there. Just enjoy that, isn't it? Because, I mean, sometimes people are always asking, what next? What next? What next? So that's the problem. So you reach something, what next? Okay, you go to another level, what next? Okay, you go to another level, what next? Be there, that's it. That's the end. So that's why sometimes certain say monks or certain Brahmins, they come to the Buddha and they keep on asking questions. Say one example is that Unnaba Brahmana, that is a Brahmin, and he asked the Buddha, okay, Bhante, now our minds are very proliferating and it is always connected with the external objects, and now eye with the sights, ear with the sounds, nose with the sound smells, tongue with the taste, body with the tangibles. So who is the one ultimately consume all this? That's the answer. That's the question he is asking from the Buddha. And then Buddha says the mind is the one consuming everything. He is the taster. He is the one enjoying everything. Now, one problem is, as we continue that cycle, so many, many things come and clutter in the mind. We remember many things. We gather many things, necessary things and unnecessary things. you know that mind, even though it is the consumer, so all that senses, when they are operating, they gather more and more things, and we hear, smell, taste, see everything. So everything come and clutter the mind. So what is the remedy? What is the refuge for the mind? What do you think? Quiet? No. Mindfulness. Mindfulness. Very beautiful sutta. Mindfulness is the remedy, Buddha said. Mindfulness is the refuge. Satya Brahmana Manasa Patisarana. Satya Brahmana Manasa Patisarana. So the Patisarana, the Pilisarana, the refuge for the mind is the sati, the mindfulness. And then he is asking, Bhante, what is the refuge for sati? What is the refuge for mindfulness? Any guess? Very beautiful area. Buddha says it's a liberation. Vimukti. Nothing is there now. Everything is given up. So mind has, so basically arrived the kind of no grasping, something like that. And then he is asking, Bhante, what is the refuge for liberation? Then Buddha said, Nibbana. Nibbana is the refuge for liberation. You know, liberation is not possible till you have defilements. That's how I understood. So liberation is something kind of a birthright if we have no defilements. But till the defilements are there, so we again and again get disturbed while in the liberated state. So the mind is liberated, nothing is there, nothing to grasp, no defilements. But defilements are again and again drop us, again and again tangle us. So Buddha's answer like, okay, Nibbana is the refuge. Then the interesting question comes, Bhante, what is the refuge for Nibbana? Any answer? What do you think?
I think the Buddha might have said that enough, you have gone too far with your questions.
Exactly, that's the point. Say, Brahmin, you have gone to the end of the questions. This is the end. Nibbana is the end. Brahmacharya Pariyosana is the end. The culmination of the Brahmacharya life is the Nibbana. So likewise, so when we reach the inner silence, okay, you just be there. Just enjoy. You don't need to proliferate there. So that's another question. There's an interesting question. Venerable Kottita and Venerable Sariputta, they often have very deep discussions. So Venerable Kottita is asking, when your mind is not proliferating, taking the sights as an object. And similarly, when not proliferating, taking sounds, smells, tastes, tangible, and the mental objects. So what are you supposed to do? Yeah, exactly. So then that question also not relevant. That's why Venerable Sadipatta is telling. So you are trying to proliferate where non-proliferation is there. So this proliferation is actually the boundary of the senses. When your senses are operating, and that is where you see things, hear things, smell, taste, tangibles, all that. That is the boundary of the senses. But this non-proliferation is where the senses are non-operative, like they are at their kind of calm state. They are free state in a way. How to say? Mukaddarame, api, what is that? Hibernate kind of a state. Okay? So when that is there, when you are asking what's next, it's a useless question. You don't need to ask. Just be. Just be there. So likewise, I feel this inner silence is something, therefore, a very interesting subject. So particularly in Vipassana, one may arrive that. So sometimes we call it as inner stillness rather than inner silence. But very much like the same thing we are talking. So the senses are operative, but they are not proliferating. They are not promoting any thinking. Thinking has basically stopped. And silence is internally there. And no defilements, and you are relaxing, but not into the sleepiness. Just be there. Just enjoy that inner silence. Because the problem is that people sometimes think, okay, I have to always look at something, always think about something. I have to investigate something. In the Vipassana point of view, I have to always investigate something. That is also not necessary. I mean, the investigation, once you do for a fair amount, So mind may give up everything and you, the mind get released. So you be there in that release state. So that is the area that I like to highlight, because otherwise we are always in the sankhara world. We are always in the conditioned world. We can't even taste this what is called unconditioned, isn't it? I am not telling that we are arahants, but at least through vipassana, when we reach some sort of a relative unconditioned, may not be the perfect unconditioned, but some sort of a relative unconditioned, okay, you just enjoy it. Anything, Asma, you have to say?
And I think, and I've heard from different sources that this is really the one and only teaching of the Buddha. That sabbe dhamma nalang abhinivesa, nothingness, emptiness, silence. Beyond that, there's nothing, just silence.
I also think that, because if you keep on questioning and if you keep on looking at for different states, then we never reach the end. So that's in the Potapada Sutta, that's the theme. So Buddha say you refine your perception level by reaching the second jhana by abandoning the first jhana. Okay? Then you reach the third jhana by abandoning the gross level of the second jhana. Now you are at the third. Now, while they are at the third, you are thinking about the fourth, abandoning the third. Suppose you come to the fourth. Now you have problems in the fourth. Now you go to the arupa, akasananchaya. You give up the fourth. Okay, now you are at akasananchaya. Now, while you are at akasananchaya, still you are not feel happy. You want to go to the next. Always going next. There, Buddha say, now you come to a conclusion. Okay, I stop this process anymore. I don't want to go to a new perception level. Rather, I want to give up even the existing one. I am not thinking about the next one. Let me calm down even the existing one, not intentionally try to achieving a new one. So that's the radical decision he is taking. You read the Potapada Sutta, very, 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 very important and very deep part, that is, where continuously what has happened, again and again, we are aiming a different thing, aiming a new thing, giving up something gross. That is necessary, by the way. But once you reach some level, you need to decide, okay, now I have come like this, giving up gross thing, achieving a new subtle thing. Make that gross and then giving up that, come to another subtle thing. Okay, at one level I decide, okay, I'll stop this. I'm not going to intentionally have a new perception level. Instead, I am relaxing the existing one. I stop making intentions now. Stop intentions. Then you touch the Nirodha. There you touch the cessation. Very deep subject, by the way. There you touch the cessation. Often we miss such teachings. What we do is continuously jumping, never feel satisfied, always frustrating, looking for something, never happy. Even in the spiritual world, isn't it? Even in the spiritual world. Say, in the sensual world, we can of course understand, never be happy because driven by craving, driven by tanha. But even in the spiritual world, isn't it? Even the spiritual world, we are achieving, struggling, never happy. Not feeling enough. That feeling enough is a door to Nibbana called desireless, appanihita. Appanihita vimokha is something where you stop desiring things anymore. What you are going to get is something unsatisfactory. No point of desiring further. I give up desiring. No more wishes, no more aims. I am happy. I am satisfied. I am utterly contented. Then the mind liberates. Think about, very different actually. It's going against the current. Now, Buddha's teaching. Now assume that you have some beautiful meditative experience. You remember it. And next time when you are sitting, you want to get that. What happened? you won't get it. Because your meditation is dependent on craving. You want to achieve something. I want to do it. I want to get that yesterday experience. It's so fantastic. I want. You won't get it. But the more you give up, okay, I don't want anything. I'm happy right now. Okay, just be calm down, relax, happy, present moment. You are there. So Buddha's teaching is very different in that sense. It is not every time, intention based. Rather, you calm down the intentions and you relax the intentions. You give up the craving and you are there naturally. You are simply there, isn't it? So these are very interesting areas actually we are exploring. So the desireless door, appanihita vimokka, is one interesting door actually we can achieve nibbana. Desireless, be happy, contented. Nothing more. Enough?
9:30. Swaminanta, this is getting to what in Zen they talk about often. I mean, because basically Zen talks about this just most simplest level of can you give up your sense of self? Basically, for Zen, it's they're talking about emptiness, mm-hmm. right? And what they say is emptiness of a self.
Exactly. So, that is exactly the Buddha's teaching in the Theravada. So, mm-hmm. what is sunyata? So, the definition of sunyata, according to the Buddha Theravada explanation, sunyamidam attenava attenienava. It is empty of a self and what belongs to a self.
Yeah, I'm not saying that Zen has something new.
No.
What they did was took Buddha's most highest teaching and they made that their one teaching.
Correct.
And so it's Zen, when you read Zen, it's very strict. It's like...
straightforward and to the point, right?
Yes. And I heard a conversation between a Tibetan teacher and a Zen teacher one time. This is just a long time ago, but I remember that the Tibetan teacher said, what you're having your students do as, just that's their only practice. That's, for us, that's the highest form of practice. We start with, the students have to really understand the teachings first. There's a lot of study, like we're doing. We're studying a lot of the Buddha's teachings. So it's interesting that Zen, they just straightforwardly
taking the
so it's interesting to that I'm reading some Zen, and it's interesting to see how you can fit Zen into Buddha, into the Theravada. It's the very highest teaching.
Correct. That's so, why I like to do it. Theravada has that part, but not given enough prominence in a way. They haven't appreciated that for a long time. So it is there, by the way. It is there, but we need to give a fair amount of recognition.
Interesting. Yeah, I noticed that Dhammajiva Bhante gives more recognition of this than you
and
as well.
And even the Katukrunda Thero. So he has taken these gems available in the Theravada, in the suttas, and he highlighted them. Okay, this is the area that you need to pay attention. So that is very... Otherwise, we never know that. Because I myself personally will never reach this kind of explanation if Katukrunda Thero haven't taught me so these kind of the teachings. Because we simply touch the ground, maybe we never come to that that kind of a teaching. So it's actually we are owed to Katukrunda Thero, Bhante Dhammajiva, for taking us to these very gems of the Dhamma. Otherwise we simply, just dwell in the basics and the other middle, not reaching, not understanding the higher teachings. Very interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. And Analio does as well.
Exactly. So actually nowadays these kind of people are there. Actually Katukrunda Thero was really influential for, Venerable Analio. And Analio Bhante is now taking Katukrunda Thero's teachings, 33 sermons. He, delivered them free of charge as a university course in the Numata Numata Center something in the Germany. There's one university. So likewise, he's propagating the thing. Very interesting. Yeah. And he's comparing even the Tibetan teachings, Mahayana teachings, Theravada teachings. He does the comparative analysis also. Very interesting. I mean, these are very good trends in a way. Yeah. So what is good in different traditions, we are now taking up. Yeah. Okay, anything to add? Yeah, please.
Sorry, yesterday was my first day of meditation. And I just wanted to know what the purpose of, like what the essence of meditation is, basically, right. Like why you meditate.
Hmm. Maybe, Kenya, can you tell why you meditate? So why should I ask?
Well, I think my personal reason for meditation is just to stop this race that I am perceiving to be in. All this doing, which just result in nothing in the end. Ultimately, everything that you're doing is for naught, for nothing. This, I don't know, maybe I'm saying something too cryptic, but this is what I personally feel to be the reason for meditation, just to put an end to these things that just seem like a dead-end road. There's nothing that you're doing them for. They're just craving, just wanting things for no reason. That's
perfectly said.
That's my reason. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think that's just a result of what you're doing, but in the end, even that inner peace, for what do you even want it? For what?
Even that may be given up then.
Yeah. I believe in the end, even that will have to be given up. Because now you don't have a reason to be peaceful.
That because reason, you are in the peace, you became the peace.
You became the peace. So that thing you were working for to become peaceful, now it's gone. So now what do you want to be peaceful for? So that inner peace itself, you have to let it go.
Yeah, so that's a beautiful term for the Arahant, Kata Karaniyo. The Kata Karaniyo means that what needs to be done, he has done, he has completed. Now nothing to do. So we still have some, you know, some driving going through, and we want to do it. I want to become an Arahant. That's the kind of a drive that we all have to have, by the way. But when it is achieved by the Arahant, so he's done. What needs to be done, he has to complete it. That's there. So Brahmacharya Esana Patipassaddha. Brahmacharya Esana. So the Esana is that we are in search of something. We are in search of something. So that in search, that search has now stopped. That's, you found it. Once you found it, I mean, nothing to have a party. I mean, you are there. You are there. You became that, very much like. And that I is also gone. I is also gone. Very interesting. So anyway, I mean, I can simply give you some mundane answer. So meditation, I mean, we are talking something very high. You know, some very higher goals, but the meditation still has some mundane goal, mundane benefits also, and we can think of that also. I mean, because you know that too much thinking, that we all are, you know, suffering because of that. That too much thinking, because we can't control thinking. Thinking is consuming us in a way that produces a lot of unhappiness, depression, obsessions, and all that in the mind. So the meditation helps us first to calm it down, relax ourselves. Okay, you just dwell there and calm down yourself. No need to think too much. So have a little bit of control over your mind. So these are some tangible benefits. You start feeling. And the other thing is that often our mind is proliferating about the past, thinking what has happened, regretting about your mistakes and cursing yourself. And maybe about the future, okay, I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to do this. You know, too much aspiration sometimes. All that makes us unhappy, frustrated. That may be fairly reduced when you start enjoying the present, dwelling in the present, practicing the mindfulness. And further, say you are not reacting immediately. You have the capacity to look at a certain situation in a more sensible way, more equanimous way, more wise way. Those are kind of more benefits. Now, as you go on, then you practice vipassana, then you are coming to a deeper understanding of what's really going on. What we so-called I, what I am so-called the person, what we so-called the, these are different things, individuals, all that. You get a deeper understanding. Then slowly, slowly, we can come to the last kind of a goal. Okay, now there is nothing to do. Okay, I'm there. Just reach the essence. So you just enjoy it, something like that. So that we can say certain tangible, mundane kind of benefits are also there. And supramundane benefits are also there. So welcome. How old are you?
22.
Good. Very interesting. Actually, these are the areas that we need to, in our life, we need to explore. Otherwise, we are simply being materialistic, simply following the desires, and simply governed by the advertisements.
I wasn't going to come for this. I'm here on holiday. So my sister was going to come here. So there was another spot that opened up. And my mom told me to come for this. Because ever since I was small, I wasn't this inclined to Buddhism. Because we didn't learn it in school. So I know like bits and pieces.
Right.
So she told me to come here so I can have like to broaden what little knowledge I have about it.
No problem. Just enjoy it and it's a different world. Yeah, this is very, now your age is the one now exploring. We want to explore the world. This make this also another exploring side of your life. So don't just carried away by the typical, you know, that instincts. Every time I'm trying to achieve the materialistic achievement, materialistic goal, that also you may have to, because for your living and, you know, prosperity and all that, materialistic prosperity. But spirituality is another area that you need to explore. Yeah. Okay, then we'll wind up and please go ahead with the sharing of minutes.
Thank you, Bhante, for your teaching. And thank you for all the great comments and questions. May our relatives and all beings share in the merit produced by today's teaching. May all celestial beings share in the merit produced by today's teaching. And may the celestial beings protect the Dhamma exposition and dispensation of the Buddha and his disciples for a very long time. And perhaps the seeds of the Buddha's teaching that have been planted in our hearts and minds may grow, producing path fruition and nibbana. I invite you to join in the recitation of the traditional Pali verses for sharing the merits.